Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review for November 2nd, 2015. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Giles Murder Trial Set to Begin, from Decatur. The jury trial of Katrina Giles, charged with taking part in one of the most shocking crimes in Macon County's history, is scheduled to begin today. Giles, 24, is facing a sentence of life in prison if convicted of first-degree murder for her alleged role in helping her brother, Timothy R. Giles, to plan the shooting and stabbing attack on three women in their Harristown home and helping him to establish an alibi afterward. The life sentence would be mandatory because of the deaths of two of the victims. The trial of Katrina Giles has been postponed numerous times during the past 4 years, partly because of a change in attorneys. The most recent delay was the result of a motion filed by her attorney, Dan Fultz, in February, just before the case was to go to trial. The motion alleged that she was the victim of sex abuse by her brother, which affected her mental state regarding her involvement. After that issue was settled by the failure of the defense to find a psychiatrist to back that claim in court, the trial was set for November 2nd. It is expected to last about 5 days. After spending 2.5 years in jail, during which he tried to hire two hitmen to kill the victim who escaped death in the initial attack, Timothy Giles pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and attempted first-degree murder in February 2014. He is in Stateville Correctional Center serving a life sentence without parole. The morning of August 5, 2011, area residents awoke to hear the news that two women were slain by an intruder, who also critically injured another woman. The murder victims were Cindynette Cindy Eaton, 57, a popular Macon County employee, and her daughter Lindsay Eaton, 23, an assistant teacher at Decatur YMCA Child Care Center. The woman who survived the attack, 27-year-old Casey Eaton, suffered 2 gunshot wounds and more than 40 stab wounds. Her mother and younger sister were the murder victims. At the time of the incident, Casey Eaton was involved in a custody battle over her baby girl with her former boyfriend, Timothy Giles, then 27, a Marine recruiter based in Centralia, who was scheduled to be transferred to North Carolina. When Casey Eaton was found face down on the bed where she had been left for dead, covered with blood, she repeatedly said to first responders, "Tim Giles, and help me," said a request for a warrant for his arrest. She had earlier called 911, and reported that her baby's father was stabbing her. Giles was arrested a few hours later as he tried to execute an elaborate plan to escape from the scene without revealing his identity. Prosecutors will present evidence of Katrina Giles' involvement in the crimes, possibly including surveillance video of her purchasing bleach and a prepaid cell phone at a Dollar General store in Macon the previous afternoon. The receipt for that purchase was later found in Timothy Giles' home, according to a police affidavit. Katrina Giles told police during an interview that her brother called her that night and asked her to drive his military vehicle to his office. She acknowledged that she had his cell phone as she did so. Military GPS records show that his work vehicle was driven to his office in Centralia starting at 12:53 a.m., 2 minutes after Timothy Giles called Katrina from the prepaid cell phone she had purchased. That call was placed a few minutes after the 911 call came in reporting the crimes. Sheriff's deputies were sent to the scene at 12:46 a.m. An alibi was being established because the GPS would show his vehicle miles from the crime scene. Investigators would find his cell phone was also at a distant location through phone company records. That alibi fell apart when a Blue Mound police officer noticed a motorcycle at a construction site at about 1:12 a.m. When he approached, the motorcyclist took off. When the officer gave chase, the motorcycle hit speeds of up to 100 miles per hour. Returning to the site with a sheriff's investigator, they found in a dumpster a backpack and garbage bag containing a Ruger 380 pistol in a holster, 380 ammunition in a box, a folding knife in a sheath, black and white nylon pants, batting gloves with blood stains, and other clothing items. The items were covered in bleach. Katrina Giles told police at about 1:20 a.m. her brother called her to say he had wrecked his motorcycle. He asked her to pick him up in Macon. Timothy Giles was arrested about 4 hours later after a foot chase with a special deputy U.S. Marshal near Mauiqua. Katrina Giles was initially arrested on a charge of obstructing justice and released on bond. After additional evidence was found, she was arrested again and charged with 8 counts of first-degree murder, 1 count of attempted first-degree murder, and 1 count of aggravated cruelty to animals, the same charges as her brother. The animal cruelty charge was the result of the slashing of a pet dog that lived at the Harristown house. She has been held in the Macon County Jail on $2 million bond since her arrest in August 2011. In an article by Tony Reed, staff writer for the Herald and Review, "Family Opens Door to History," from Decatur. You just never know when a memory is going to fly out of the past and launch a surprise bombing run on the emotions of today. The McQuality family has certainly been left feeling a little shell-shocked after their memory dropped in shaped like a front crew door from a World War II B-17 bomber blown out of the sky 70 years ago. And not just any bomber, but the actual one named the Vibrant Virgin, on which Robert McQuality was a waste gunner when it was shot down on a mission over Germany on October 8, 1943. McQuality, who grew up in Decatur, and the 10-man crew bailed out and survived 20 months as prisoners until they were liberated at the end of the war. Another survivor was that crew door, buried in the rich earth of a German farm near Quakenbrook. They were trying to dig out a foxhole, as in a real foxhole made by a fox, not an army foxhole, and clunk, they hit something, says the Reverend Dan McQuality, Robert McQuality's grandson, and this is what they pulled out of the ground. He points to a dull gray piece of aluminum with handle shaped like a square with rounded corners that measures roughly 24 inches by 24 inches. Boeing is stamped on one corner, and there are still numbers visible written in wax crayon at the Boeing factory, no doubt to aid easy assembly. This is quite a story, says Bob McQuality, 67, a Vietnam War era Air Force veteran and Robert's son and Dan's father. I think God just put certain events in the right sequence and order for certain things to happen. It's such an incredible story. So here's the return flight path of the McQuality door. It begins with his grandson, Dan, who is a talented artist as well as the pastor of Grace Lutheran Church in Lincoln. He runs a thriving part-time business painting decorative mock plane panels in the style of World War II bombers and fighters, as well as decorating leather jackets and other goodies. His website, www.noseartismypassion.com, told a little of his grandfather's service, and the distinctive name of his long-lost B-17 got noticed by a guy from Germany. This man, Hendrik Pooch, said, "Your grandfather's plane crashed near my grandmother's farm," says McQuality, who was an Army combat medic in the Gulf War. "He was very interested in it. You know, if a plane crashes in your backyard, I suppose it's going to get some notoriety." McQuality's first contact with Pooch was about 6 years ago, and through him, he would also encounter German World War II researcher Manfred Boog, who had compiled detailed histories featuring the story of the Vibrant Virgin. The Germans had various pictures of the plane wreckage and the aircraft door, and gradually, McQuality realized this one artifact might still be around. McQuality is Facebook friends with a German pilot, Harold Wiegand. He made some inquiries and traced the door and the person who had it. All the Germans involved thought it was a fascinating piece of wartime memorabilia, but came to the conclusion it was time for it to fly home. They just all talked about it over there and said, you know, What? This is neat to have, but there is one place this needs to be, and it needs to be back home overseas, McQuality says. Some $50 in airmail postage later, the 10-pound door arrived October 2nd, its flight unmolested by the German Luftwaffe this time, but still watched anxiously every step of the way by McQuality. He tracked it online, recalls his wife Rachel. He watched it every day. Granddad McQuality, who drove a Pepsi delivery truck for more than 30 years and didn't talk about the war much, died in 1996 at the age of 72. His grandson theorizes that men who have faced death while delivering death to others don't always feel comfortable chatting about the harrowing details of kill or be killed events that belonged to another lifetime. All of the Vibrant Virgin crew are gone now, but McQuality's family knows that, reluctant to talk or not, he remained fiercely proud of these men and kept in touch with them. And now, as a symbol of their courage and of the courage of all those brave flight crews who risked their lives to bomb Hitler's thousand-year Reich back to the Stone Age, stands this enduring metal door, a gateway to memory the family plans to keep and pass down with its stories. We're so proud to have this little piece of the plane that wasn't destroyed, Dan McQuality says. It's also weird, but Dad and I talked, and it's almost like it's imprinted on our DNA. Whenever there is a warbird, combat aircraft, around, we both feel this strong emotion, this connection. I don't know if that is something literally passed down from what Robert McQuality experienced. We just can't explain that. And the arrival of the aircraft door has also opened up pathways to a surprising amount of fresh information from the German side about the fate of the B-17 crew. It turns out that Grandfather McQuality was left hanging by his parachute in the upper branches of a tree after bailing out. There he was found by a farmer and a pilot friend on leave who were out hunting. The farmer had said, "Give me your gun, I am going to shoot him," says Dan McQuality. But the other guy said, "No, no, don't do that." So they let him climb down. The pilot had meanwhile landed near a chicken coop and tried to hide in it, but all the crew got caught. Official U.S. war records state Robert McQuality's plane was fatally hit by ground fire, prompting the crew to bail out. But German records show the dying aircraft also was hammered by an FW-190 fighter armed with the latest deadly invention, rockets. "It shot a rocket and blew one of the wings of my dad's plane right off," says Bob McQuality. The German pilot who fired that rocket was already a fighter ace and something of a folk hero. But he would not live to savor his latest victory for long. Records show he died possibly later that day in another aerial combat. Eyewitnesses said his parachute failed to open after he had bailed out of his burning plane. And there are photographs attached to this article. One is Bob McQuality and his son Dan McQuality holding the hatch door of the B-17 bomber that Bob's father and Dan's grandfather, Robert, served in during World War II. Then there's a photograph of Robert McQuality looking very handsome from his World War II service, a photograph of the Vibrant Virgin plane, and finally a photograph of the crew with McQuality in the picture. And from the local pages by Allison Petty, staff writer, Gleason to suggest city priorities, from Decatur. Almost 8 months on the job, city manager Tim Gleason is slated to present his vision for the community to the Decatur City Council tonight. Gleason said he will offer his priorities to the council and seek their feedback. Topping the list are the city's declining property values and the overall desirability of the community, both for residents and businesses. He also plans to talk about the city's infrastructure needs, including the dilapidated roads that have previously inspired council members to contemplate a local motor fuel tax. At the end of the day, these are new ideas, that we're making an investment in our future, trying to control our own destiny instead of just barely treading water, he said. I'm anxious to get started. The presentation was scheduled for September, about the time of Gleason's 6-month anniversary. It was delayed by various circumstances, including former Mayor Mike McElroy's death in July and the subsequent appointment of a new mayor and council member. Gleason said he has been looking forward to offering the ideas since he started on the job. It's been a quick 7.5 months, but actually, much of what is going to be discussed on Monday night are discussions that began with Mayor McElroy, he said. My opinion has not changed, and in every case has just been solidified over my time here. And a sidebar, if you go, the Decatur City Council meets at 5:30 p.m. Monday in the Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Article by Tony Reed from Forsyth. Game Day Stimulates at Mall. There is nothing like a little gamesmanship to promote family unity. It's time for you to go down, Mom, said Ethan Green, 12, locked in a battle of wits with his teacher mom, Marisha Branson, 41, and happily flicking her game pieces off a sheer plastic ledge in a game called Leaps and Ledges. Oh, okay, thanks, said Branson, who didn't mean it at all. I'm not scared. I'll get you back. This titanic struggle raged on quietly at the Hickory Point Mall on Sunday afternoon. As curious shoppers strolled by, Ethan and his mom fought their duel on a table set up outside the store, Dr. G's Brainworks. Switching off electric games, the store sells all kinds of board games and other offerings requiring players to do things, assemble things, find things, remember, know history, and just generally think. Each Sunday, it hosts a game day challenge where, free of charge, passers-by can try their hand at something traditional, such as chess, or take on a new game, such as Leaps and Ledges. Branson, who teaches fifth grade at French Academy, says games that make kids think about what they are doing can trigger the capacity to learn. With her own son, she gives and expects no quarter. I don't take it easy and let him win, she said with a steely smile. I make him learn how to win. Dr. G's Brainworks was founded by Dr. William Gingold, a retired psychologist and gerontologist. He says games can not only expand young minds, but can help keep older ones sharp, too. Store manager Brittany Brim, 27, points to mental workout jigsaw puzzles, such as a 5,000-piece monster that recreates Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel ceiling masterpiece in Rome. We've even had elderly home nurses come in here and buy our games because they see them improve their patients by giving them something challenging to do, Brim added. Meanwhile, outside the store, sales associate and sharp chess player Daryl Hunt, 21, just got his king's head handed to him by random passing player Tony Stepney, 60. It was Hunt's first defeat in 5 weeks of game day chess duels. Personally, I think games like this are the best thing to work the mind, said Stepney, who lives in Decatur. When you've got a game on a board, you've got to make it happen. You've got to use that mind. And an article from Mattoon by Dawn James Lee, news service writer. Crowdfunding aids album production. With about $12,000 in donations from friends, family, and area community, a local band was able to produce its first album in Nashville. Muddy Grove lead singer Leslie Cornell, a 2008 graduate of Mattoon High School, said the album was fan-funded through the crowdfunding site Indiegogo.com. A ton of people showed up for support. We prayed about it. It came out of the woodwork. It was just amazing. It says something about the Mattoon-Charleston areas. It's a pretty supportive area, she said. Indiegogo, on its website, states it has helped more than 10,000 entrepreneurs achieve their dreams. As part of the online fundraising initiative, the lead singer said they offered different perks and packages for different levels of donations. A couple of examples are, for $50, a donor could receive a CD and a Muddy Grove mug, whereas a $1,000 donation would merit the group writing a song specifically for the donor on the album. Fans will get taken care of first before the album is made available on iTunes or anywhere else, Cornell said. Cornell, her brother Johnny, and her husband Caleb Francis make up the group. Leslie Cornell is the lead singer, while her brother plays the acoustic and electric guitar and mandolin. Francis rounds out the group as the bass player. The Cornell siblings come from a family of musicians, and Leslie Cornell says she started singing for church at age 6. The two have been playing music together their whole lives and have been co-writing their original pieces since 2008. Last year, they decided to move to Nashville and have met a lot of people. They were introduced to Andy Hunt, a Grammy Award-winning producer. "We've been in the studio. We play out every now and then," said Leslie. Mostly, the group has been networking and songwriting. Prior to moving to Tennessee, the group played at Common Grounds and Jackson Avenue Coffee locally. Also, Johnny was previously a worship leader at Broadway Christian Church, and Leslie and Caleb were on the worship team at Salisbury Christian Church. The group is anticipating headlining a concert soon at The Basement in Nashville. They got the gig through a touring group known as The Blind Spot from Ithaca, New York. And an article from Charleston, "Costumed dogs parade proudly at Mattoon event." Trick-or-treating children were not the only ones who were out and about in costume on Saturday. 20 costumed canines and their owners paraded around the grounds of the Charleston Area Dog Club facility during the annual Barktoberfest event. Their costumes included Spider-Man, Uncle Sam, a Chicago Bear, a Bumblebee, a Red Devil, and more. Kristen Pierce of Mattoon decked out her 5-year-old Border Collie mix, Jasmine, with fairy wings, and her 2.5-year-old Labrador mix, Kia, with a pink tutu for the occasion. Pierce said this was her first Barktoberfest, but she has enrolled Kia in an obedience class through the dog club before. Pierce said she adopted Kia as a rescue dog and found her to be fearful at first, so she sought out assistance. "The class has helped her quite a bit. It has helped her a lot to come out of her shell," Pierce said. Kia and Jasmine were well behaved as they mingled with the other dogs at Barktoberfest. Janice Dare of Charleston dressed her 7-year-old Chihuahua Dachshund mix, Cinnamon Rose, as a witch, and her 6-year-old Dachshund, Lucy, as a pumpkin. She said these two dogs are veterans of last year's Barktoberfest, and her 10-year-old Pug, Sid, is an alumnus of the club's dog training. "I just always enjoy coming to events hosted by the Dog Activity Club. We came out last year and had a good time," Dare said. "I know several of the people here." Becky Furry of Charleston suited up her 4-year-old Chihuahua, Paco Bell, in an orange hooded sweatshirt and a little sombrero to represent his Mexican heritage. She added that Chihuahuas get chilly easily, so Paco Bell has grown accustomed to wearing sweaters and costumes to stay warm. Furry, who is a member of the dog club, said she enjoys the Halloween event because they get to meet lots of new people and their dogs. "It's a good way to get the community involved and let them know what we are about," she said. Club member Ellen Johnson said they hold classes in the spring, summer, and fall at the club's facility, which is the former Putt and Swing site. This site has a variety of dog agility obstacles. She said the club holds winter classes in the one-stop copy shop building in Mattoon. Johnson said the club is raising funds to build an indoor classroom building on the grounds of its 17th Street facility. She said this building also will be a place where local dog owners can take their canines in the event of a disaster, noting that Red Cross shelters do not allow pets. More information about the Charleston Area Dog Club is available by contacting Johnson at 217-345-3576. Three brief articles from the Crime Pages, all from Decatur. The first, smash and grab robbery. Police are hunting thieves wielding hammers who stole jewelry Saturday afternoon from the Flora Gems store. Police reports said two men wearing Halloween masks entered the store at 101 North Water Street at 3:50 p.m. In front of staff and three customers in the business at the time, they smashed a glass display case before grabbing handfuls of the jewelry inside and fleeing. Nobody was listed as being injured. Detectives are seeking witnesses who saw the suspects entering or leaving. The next brief, home invasion foiled. A woman scared off home invaders early Sunday by getting her elderly mother to activate a medical alert device. Written police reports say that as the alarm sounded, the two hooded male suspects fled the house in the 2600 block of East Main Street. The men, both about 6 feet tall and one of them armed with a gun, had kicked in the back door at 2:45 a.m. and surprised the 53-year-old woman as she slept on a living room couch with her grandson, age 7. The suspects had ordered the woman to lie on the floor, but she dashed into her mother's bedroom and told her to use the alarm to summon help. There were no reports of injuries. And finally, street robbery. A woman who went for a walk to cool off after an argument with her husband early Sunday was pushed to the ground and robbed of her purse, according to police reports. The 24-year-old victim was accosted by a male robber as she walked south at 3:10 a.m. in the 1800 block of North Main Street. As she fell and rolled over, the robber grabbed her purse containing a cell phone and some cash and fled on foot. She was not listed as being injured. The suspect is described as black, 5 feet 6 inches tall, 160 pounds, with short hair and wearing a black hooded sweatshirt. And we will finish this half hour with a reading of the meetings calendar for Monday, schedule of government meetings and other activities of interest. In Decatur and Macon County, the Argenta Village Board of Trustees, 6 p.m. at the Village Hall on Monday. The following are all on Monday. The Blue Mound Village Board, 6 p.m., 317 Railroad Avenue. Decatur City Council at 5:30 p.m., Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Forsyth Village Board of Trustees at 6:30 p.m., Village Hall, 301 U.S. 51. Hickory Point Town Board of Trustees at 7:30 p.m., Town Hall, 2240 West Ash Avenue in Decatur. Illini Park District Board of Trustees at 6 p.m., 265 South Main Street in Warrensburg. The Latham Fire Protection District Board of Trustees, 7 p.m. at the Firehouse, 271 Macon Street. Macon County Board Finance Committee at 5:15 p.m., County Office Building 141 South Main Street in Decatur. Mount Zion Village Board of Trustees, 5:15 p.m., Village Hall, 1400 Mount Zion Parkway. Warrensburg Village Board of Trustees at 7 p.m., 155 East Main Street. And the Warrensburg Fire Protection District Board of Trustees, 7 p.m., the Firehouse at 420 East Main Street. On Tuesday, the Decatur Civil Service Commission meets at noon, second floor conference room in the Decatur Civic Center. The Decatur Firemen's Pension Fund Board of Trustees meets at 3 p.m. at the Fire Station No. 1, 1415 North Water Street. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for November 2nd, 2015. Please stay tuned.